Hello, beautiful people. Today, we are joined by Dan Goh. Dan is an entrepreneur and creator. He's also a former personal trainer and a gym owner. And in this conversation, we spoke about a wide array of topics from entrepreneurship to creation to mastery to how he quit coffee. It was just a very wide-ranging conversation. And I'm extremely excited to bring it to you. I just listened to it myself and it just filled me with such joy. And I'm hoping that you get that same energy from listening to Dan and me talk about this wide array of topics. In other news, the YouTube channel has crossed over 1,000 subscribers and I'm just really excited by it. It's been something that I've been working on for the past year now, almost 10, 11 months, and to have the milestone of 1,000 subscribers just fills me with joy, and I want to share that with you who are listening as well. And one of the reasons for that is I've started to post shorter clips on YouTube, TikTok, and Twitter, and Instagram Reels, so you might be seeing more and more of those as we go on. But just thank you for listening, thank you for subscribing if you do, and just really appreciative for every single person who pays attention to what I'm doing here. It means more to me than you'll ever know. But enough about me. Let's get into this conversation and episode with Dan Goh.
Interesting people, thought-provoking conversations, nutrition for your brain. Journey through the minds of the world's top performers and discover what it really takes to achieve your highest version. This is the Danny Miranda Podcast.
So you've gone and you've mastered the art of Twitter. It's so clear, it's apparent. You're incredible at that art, from my perspective at least. It seems like you've put in your hours and time. So how do you go about mastering another creative aspect, whether that's audio or video? What lessons do you take from the writing that you pull to the next medium?
It is actually to find the machine, right? And with the machine, I don't necessarily mean like the tools or anything like that. When I think about the machine, I think about the system and I think about the routine. And I think about the thing that I can consistently do over the course of years that I can show up to on a regular basis. So even with Twitter, like I show up to that every single morning and I create, right? When it comes to podcasting, it's finding that machine and that routine. And to a certain degree, because I'm just kind of getting started into that, is actually to find my voice in those things as well. So with Twitter, it's like, you know, it took me a while and I feel like I found kind of like my voice and my range. And with podcasting, it's the both of the things. Okay, so what is the system that I'm going to use to be consistent and prolific? And also, what is my voice? You know, like what exactly am I going to sound like? What do I want to sound like? And kind of just trying to find that authentic voice that I can really like hang my hat on. And of course, I love talking and I love hearing myself talk, but you know, how can I actually take that and really just like hone it in and find something that I feel is coming out as authentically as me as possible. So yeah, top two things whenever I'm doing anything in terms of creation and content creation is just like, what is the machine? What's the system? And then what is the authentic voice that I want to put out there?
How much of it is the authentic voice that you decide versus the authentic voice that you create via doing the process?
Man, it's a creation by decision, right? Or decision by creation, right? So it's like, the way I think about it is like, you know, it's the old, I guess you could say platitude is like, you find yourself by creating yourself in the act of motion, right? So I find my authentic voice the more work I put out there and the more I actually create. And I cannot find it by journaling or whatever. Yes, I can find it through that, but it comes out more apparent when I'm actually in creation, I'm publishing shit and I'm putting shit out there for the world to see. and I'm leaving myself open to criticism, feedback, and everything above. So that is kind of like, it is through motion and actually taking action and putting stuff out there, that is where I find that authentic voice. And then sometimes, you know this as well, it's like sometimes you put stuff out there and you're just like, oh, did I really mean that? You know, did I really feel comfortable being, you know, putting that out there? And then there are just some things that you put out there that got a great response, but also you're like, wow, I really put myself into that one. You know, it wasn't just lackadaisical. I actually put everything of myself into that particular piece. So I find myself by creating myself, and I can only create myself by taking action and throwing my ideas into the fire and seeing which one comes out.
Are there any particular posts or pieces that you've created over the past year that really stand out, that you're really happy that you created, or happy how it turned out?
Yes. The little piece that I did, so I did a podcast on the fact that I quit caffeine or quit coffee for like 46 days. It was based on my own experience, and plus I added a little bit of like evidence stuff into that as well. But the general thing was I was just talking about my experience with this thing I was going through, and I treat things like a scientist. I am observing. I am taking notes. I am really just kind of curious about myself and the way I react to these things. So that piece, definitely, I am super proud of. And in my tweets, to a incredibly large extent, it is me. And it is the stuff I think about. Everyone, you know, the way that I tweet is very, very concise. It's very, I'm not going to say it's poignant. It depends on who's reading it, I guess. But it's very concise, very straight to the point. And the funny thing is that people don't understand that that's actually how I think. And it usually is this preamble of like 100 things that I'm actually thinking about, which leads to that one concise moment and that concise lesson. So I'm most proud of kind of like the tweets that I put out, for sure. That is for sure. And then that particular piece about caffeine and getting off of coffee is fantastic. Yeah, I felt really good about that.
So how do you get off coffee?
By accident. By complete accident. So we've been traveling for the past like 7 to 8, 9 months. I've been drinking Costa Rican coffee. So I've been living in Costa Rica for about 7 to 8 months. And I've been drinking Costa Rican coffee first thing in the morning. One thing you should know about Costa Rican coffee, it is like this shit. It is like, I think they're putting extra caffeine in that. I'm not sure. But you get high, you know? So I've been basically drinking this thing. And for the past 20 plus years, I've been drinking coffee. And I remember we came back from our trip, from our travels. And I ended up, we came back, we had to quarantine. So we stayed in this place. It had its own coffee maker. And then I put in one of those pods. Straight first thing in the morning, I wake up like I do, put in one of those pods because I can't go out to get coffee. Put it in, I drink it, and I subsequently have a moody fucking day. You know, I have a bad day, you know? Well, I don't have a bad day. It's just a moody one. And my wife, I go to, actually the next day happens. I'm like, what the fuck is that? I go to the next day, I'm putting this coffee pot in. My wife, Linda, she says to me, you know that you're drinking decaf coffee, right? And I looked at it and I'm just like, bamboozled. I've been bamboozled, you know? Like they bamboozled me. God damn it, you know? And then after I go through my victimhood and my victim thinking mentality and all this kind of shit, I actually look at it and I'm just like, you know what? It's been 20 plus years that I haven't got off of coffee. Every single day of my life, I've drank a cup of coffee. Every single day of my life. And I've never given myself a chance to actually get off of this thing. So think about it this way. It's like someone smokes marijuana every single day of their life, right? They've never given themselves a chance to see what life is like without marijuana, you know? And people would be like, well, you can't compare one drug to another. It's like, hey, they're both psychoactive compounds, right? So, I mean, they both have benefits, drawbacks, and all this kind of stuff. So the thing is, like, I asked myself, I was like, when's the last time I went without a cup of coffee throughout my entire day? I'm like, I can't think of one, you know? It's been every single day. So I had this thought in my mind, what would life look like without having coffee and caffeine? And And I was just like, okay, well, since I'm on a roll right now, I have one day under my belt. Let's see exactly what a week looks like. So a week passes by. I have like a shitty week. You know, it's like I'm going through these like withdrawal symptoms. And after that,
what life made it shitty particularly? Up.
Just the fact that I felt more tired than usual. My workouts, like me working out, felt like a slug. Like I felt lazy, unmotivated. And caffeine was one of those things that I didn't realize, but I took as like a pre-workout, and it was amazing. Like, it's great. And I stopped taking that. I stopped taking any kind of like stimulants before working out. And now that my workouts are just, they were grinders, you know, like just, they were hard. So after the first week, I get through that. Second week's a little bit better. Third week's a little bit better. Fourth week, it gets better after that. Then I'm just used to drinking decaf coffee this entire time. I'm feeling great, you know? And then it gets to a point where I'm seeing the benefits that come along with not drinking coffee. And one of the benefits is like, number one, it's the lack of dependence on something to wake your day up. Number two is my ability to go to sleep like a teenager. Like I time travel, you know? So I go to sleep, I close my eyes, and then I wake up and I'm just like, holy crap, where the heck did that go? Because usually like when I sleep, it's like it's dispersed. Even though I do everything possible, like, you know, I wake up in the middle of the night. Sometimes it takes me longer. And I never realized like why that was until I kind of got off of caffeine. And then I realized, oh, shit. Then I start to do more research into it. And the older you get, I'm 41, turning 42, your body just metabolizes it differently. So this is where I understood that having a cup of caffeine or a cup of coffee at like, let's just say it's like 11, like 10 a.m., 9 a.m., 10 a.m., by the time you go to sleep at 9 p.m., you could still have maybe 50% of that coffee still in you or that caffeine. So it kind of like led me down this deep dive into like, you know, what caffeine does, how it metabolizes in the body. And that just led me down like a rabbit hole. And yeah, it was because of those two benefits. And then I thought to myself, okay, so number one, is it a vicious cycle where people are just like drinking a lot of caffeine, not getting the sleep that they need, waking up like shit, and needing to drink more caffeine in order to feel better again? And it just becomes this like dependency cycle. Or, you know, like maybe we could do things a little bit differently, you know, and let's get off of caffeine, see the effect. And then now, like, I think it was 46 days I was off of, I was drinking just the decafs. Now I'm actually testing out smaller doses of caffeine, right? I'm trying out one-shot espressos. How does that affect my sleep? How does that affect my energy? I'm trying out a minuscule amounts of drip coffee along with my decaf. And I think this is, like, where, I think this is actually something we all need to do, right? Because we just accept the dosages that we get from everyone when it comes to, like, let's just say you live in the United States, I live in Canada. When you go out to eat, guess what? You're eating double the amount that you really should, right? The portion sizes are crazy. When you're drinking caffeine, you quite possibly could be taking double the amount that you actually need, right? And that could have detrimental effects on your sleep and all this kind of stuff. So I'm not, like, it's kind of evolved me from going complete away from caffeine to, hey, you know, maybe caffeine has its benefit, but there is a drawback to the amount of benefits that you get past a certain point of like drinking caffeine. And that's the point where I'm at right now. So I realize that caffeine is like super, it makes you super productive and I love that. But if it does make you lose an hour or two of sleep at night, that's kind of not good. So I'm finding out what the right dosage is for me now. And I think everyone should give themselves a chance to do that.
Now, decaf has some caffeine in it, right?
Yeah.
A minuscule amount.
Like 5 milligrams.
Like 5 milligrams, something like that.
5 milligrams as opposed to like a cup of coffee, which could range anywhere between 50 to 100 milligrams of caffeine. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this 46-day experiment is something you've done in the past. Now you're starting to reintroduce caffeine in a small dosage. And what has been the biggest takeaway since reintroducing it?
Biggest takeaway is the dosages, right? So I used to take in one cup of coffee and just accept it, just like that, right? I'm realizing that you can actually elicit the same effect off of different dosages, and it's always like this balancing act. It's a balancing act between how well you sleep and how much caffeine do you need to take to be super uber productive throughout the rest of your day, right? And now I'm trying to find what that balance is. And my whole life is about balance. Like, my whole life is about balancing being super driven, having a family, and really prioritizing that. It's balancing it between, I love living a pleasurable life, and I love, like, you know, food and all this kind of stuff, and keeping in shape, not being a fat ass, you know. So it's just a balance with everything. So now, like, I'm in this particular experience range where I'm like, okay, well, how much caffeine does it take for me to be as productive as I need to be? What time do I need to drink this? And then how much of an effect does that have on the time that I actually choose to go to sleep? And I'm still in this kind of research phase. So I wish I could give you something like definite, but I know for a fact that probably anywhere around like 20 to 30 milligrams is enough for me to feel energetic and feel productive. Anything above that, so yes, I'm going to feel energetic, I'm going to feel productive, but that is actually going to have a detrimental effect on my ability to not only go to sleep, but stay asleep. So that's where I'm at right now. I'm still testing. I'm actually testing mushroom coffees next, and we're going to see exactly what happens with that. So yeah, man, like, my whole body is just like one big lab that I just, you know, try to test multiple things out for. And I think that's cool. You know, I think everyone should find out what works for them as well. So yeah.
You mentioned the balance piece and being driven and also managing a family. I'm curious, What are some of the biggest lessons you've learned, or some of the biggest ways you've gone about having a family while also having this drive to achieve X, Y, and Z?
Yeah. I definitely will say that I am not perfect at this, for sure. So take whatever I say with a grain of salt, but I do prioritize my family, and that takes up as much priority as my time with being driven and trying to push this company to the levels that I think it can get to. So number one is going to be, like, in the world of abundance, you need guardrails, because you could do whatever you want with your time, right? You have an abundance. You have this choice of freedom as an entrepreneur. So with abundance comes great responsibility. With great abundance comes great responsibility when it comes to food, when it comes to your time. And you need to create, now we're in a sense where we need to create guardrails for yourself. We actually need to create rules for yourself. So one of the rules that I have is from like 4 o'clock onwards, it's all family time, right? 4 o'clock onwards, it's all family time. By the time 5 o'clock hits, that's when the phone's gone, and that's when I'm not going to be on the phone. I'm going to be completely, like, dinner time with family, do all that kind of stuff. And those are the guardrails that I need to set up for my life in order to be a really good dad, right? And for me, I look at it also, like, with negative visualization, too. It's just like, okay, well, you know, I could put 12 hours a day into this particular business, right? But what happens if my daughter doesn't even know who I am by the time she gets to like 10 years old? What happens if she never goes on dates with me? What happens if she just sees me as like another person in the house rather than like her dad that she can come to and be supported by and have his full attention? So there is a bit of negative visualization in there too. It's like, I do see myself as, oh God, that's a horrible dad. But I do see myself as like, this is the dad I want to be. That comes into it. And also with like the work piece, I understand there's two things at play right here. So number one is Parkinson's Law. Parkinson's Law states that you're going to get whatever work done within this particular time frame. And the way that people communicate with you on your team, they will understand what these guardrails are if you communicate them and you stick by them. If you let these guardrails fall by the wayside and you just give it up with like one little Slack message or one little call, then basically you're telling everyone that anyone can infringe on your time, regardless of whatever, however you're spending this time. And with Parkinson's Law, you have this amount of work that you have to do within your business. So you're going to get that work done if you give yourself an allotted amount of time. If you give yourself 12 hours in a day to get this shit done, then guess what? You're going to take 12 hours in a day to get that shit done. You're going to multitask. You're going to do everything, right? If you give yourself like literally 4 to 6 hours to get this stuff done, then guess what? It's going to take that time as well. And you're going to be better with time management as a result. And the other thing I realized on top of Parkinson's Law is like for the stuff that you have to do, there's a bunch of other stuff that you should not be doing inside of your business. So like I'm at this point right now where I'm transitioning from being a coach, and I'm still a coach, but I'm transitioning from being a coach to being a CEO and thinking like a CEO and having a CEO mindset, right? And unfortunately, that doesn't come a lot with doing the actual nitty-gritty of the business. You have to outsource these things. So this whole year has been the process of, actually, ever since we had our interview with each other, I've built a team, or not I've built a team, actually. I've hired on the services of a friend, and this guy's actually going to eventually turn partner. And and basically, we've built this business together, and he has been the one to kind of like be integrator. I've been the one to be visionary. And essentially, he's helped me outsource a great deal of the stuff that I usually would have done being the chief cook, bottle washer in my business. So it is about like creating these abundance guardrails because we all need them. It is about understanding Parkinson's Law and having really hard start and stop times to when you work. And it's about making sure that you have a team that is supporting the weakest areas of which you are not good at. So you don't have to think about that stuff anymore. You can just focus on the stuff that you're really good at.
What for you would you say was the weakest area or the area that you needed the most help with? Maybe the area that you didn't enjoy doing the most. And how did I bring someone on help that?
I was actually going to say the last part of what you said. Because I can definitely do stuff and I can do it well. But should I be doing that? Right? That's the question. So I basically took all of the things that I didn't like to do and I gave them to someone, or we outsourced those things. So things like ranging from sales to logistics to operations to sometimes even like the coaching itself. We have outsourced these things, but we've hired on key pieces to our team to take care of these things in a way that they could actually be better than I could have ever been that, because they're specializing in that particular thing, which I do not like to do. It actually goes to like what Dan Sullivan says as well, which is to say that we all have this unique ability, right? For me, my unique ability is creating content on Twitter, creating content on Instagram, having this content being interacted with from various people, writing to a very large degree, creating these podcasts so people can get in deeper. At some point in time, it's going to be creating these YouTube videos. And it is basically, my whole life is just about creation and fulfillment. So when I say fulfillment, I mean in one of two ways. So number one, I'm creating, I'm attracting the people I want to do business with. The other one is going to be fulfillment. Number one is my own fulfillment. Am I being fulfilled doing this stuff? Do I feel great at the end of each day with what I've accomplished? Yes. Now, fulfillment also means, are we fulfilling everything that we need to for the clients that we sign on and the people that we work with? And making sure that we are really showing up in that area and doing the best of our ability. And that's what I mean. That's basically what it is right now.
So you mentioned the creation piece, and it's crazy to me because you started putting out content on Twitter in March of 2020, I believe.
Yeah.
And it's like this has become such a big part of your life so quickly. What were the previous signs earlier in your life that you enjoyed creation and that you would get such a joy from the process of creating?
Two things. Number one is just the process of doing it is actually easy, right? Yes, it's going to be a grind. Yes, it's going to be hard to kind of like find that voice, but the process of doing it is actually like once you get over the insecurities of putting your ideas out, how easy is this for me to do? Right? For some people, for you, podcasting is like super easy. You jump on and and talk with anyone for hours. You know, for me, sitting in front of a computer and actually writing out my thoughts, that is easy to me, right? I actually look at it and I'm like, just like, people are like, how do you fucking tweet so much? And I'm just like, do you think? You know, how often do you think? Then that is your content, right? That the way that you think and whatever it is, that's your content. And I think like a billion thoughts a day. So basically, I'm actually limiting the amount of stuff that I put on Twitter with the amount of thoughts that I have. The other thing that I would say is results, right? There is a certain fingertip feel that you have for when you start putting stuff out and the result that you're getting out of it afterwards. And I always say this, it's like people shoot themselves in the foot when they're getting really good results and then they just stop, you know? So I have this thing, right? Let's just say this, like I've seen people grow on Twitter at an exponential rate and sometimes growing even faster than me. And then a little bit down the line, they're going to be like, hey guys, I'm taking a week off of Twitter and going to come back, right? And I'm just like, bro, like you have so much momentum on your side and you're purposely saying, nah, I'm going to stop this. And that to me is like a self-image thing. It's like, I need a break from Twitter. Like, what the fuck you need a break from? Like, you're just putting you're putting tweets out there. Like, the fuck you need a break from? Like, it should not be that hard. But anyways, that's a personal thing. But still, it's like, is it easy? Is it getting you results, right? And if you're doing those two things, then that, I say, is a really good sign that things are working out, right? Just anything that you get traction on. Anything you get traction on. And actually, when I first came onto Twitter, I think I said this to you, I'm not exactly sure, but I had momentum on my side, right? So once I started creating and once people started interacting with my stuff, I started to have this momentum where it's like, oh my God, I have this audience. People are listening to me. My audience is growing. The only thing in my brain at that point in time was just like, keep creating. Like, just keep this momentum going. It's like riding a wave. So every single day I committed myself, well, let's just say 99% of the days I committed myself to showing up and doing it, you know? And just keeping up that momentum. And not stopping, and understanding that self-sabotage is actually the process of people of actually getting away from being prolific, right? So there are a couple. So the way that I think, oh, sorry, Danny, you're cutting out over here, or I just lost your good. Video for a second.
It's all good all if right, it cuts the video. All right, it records okay. Locally on both sides.
Okay. So okay, just checking.
Don't worry
just
about checking. It. I'm here, baby. Yeah, man. I'm here with you.
Oh, I love it. All right, so. When you have momentum, right, it doesn't come every single day. It doesn't come that often. It's actually quite rare to get momentum, right? To actually know that what you're doing is actually making a difference and you're getting results out of it. And one of the biggest things I see when people get momentum is that they stop it purposely or maybe subconsciously. I don't know.
What do you think that is?
Number one, it could be a number of things. So I always look at things as multifactorial. So a lot of people are like, what's the main reason for this? It's like, there are a multitude of reasons. So for me, what I think they are based on my experience with myself, just in general, is a lack of belief. When you get these results that you're not used to, right? When you get results that you're just like, oh my God, like for you, I think, what did you do? You got past like 100,000 downloads or something like that, mm-hmm. or whatever it is. Like when you hit that milestone, that is where people party, right? Mm-hmm. That's where people party and they're like, oh, all right, everything's great and whatever like that. For me, I'm just like, push this motherfucker even harder right now. Double down, baby. Back to work. Double down, get back to work. Celebrate with more work. Celebrate with more content. Celebrate with being more prolific. And I actually say this is like, when I look at content creation and when I look at like creators in general, the one thing that I feel separates most people from everyone else, the successful ones from the unsuccessful ones, is how prolific they are. How consistent do they come out and be and come out with this content? You know, how much content are they actually putting out, right? And people will be like, I remember I heard one of my friends, they didn't want to call him out on it. He was like, hey guys, I'm going to do like one tweet a day. You know, I'm gonna do one tweet a day, and that's gonna be my, like, whatever it is, that's gonna be my challenge. And I'm just like, bro, one tweet gets you in front of 2% of your audience, right? You're not gonna get traction on the platform like Twitter off of one tweet a day, right? So I always err on the side of being prolific, being consistent and prolific. If there is anything that I would say that has attributed to success is being prolific, being consistent. And what stops people from that is generally their self-image. That's number one, the way that they see the results that they're supposed to get. And if it doesn't line up, if they're getting too much results, they're going to slow it down and they're going to be like, oh, the thermostat's a little bit too hot, we got to cool this down. If they're not getting enough, it's like they're going to, oh, shit, I got to create more, I got to do more. And they're really doing it in an outcome-focused way, right? It is literally a lack of self-image to say that I don't deserve this, so I'm just going to purpose or subconsciously slow myself down. The other thing is that they just don't know how to handle it. So when you're putting yourself out there on a podcast, or when you're putting yourself out there on Twitter, on Instagram, or whatever it is, you're putting yourself out there. You're bearing your soul, right? You're literally bearing your soul. So that's hard for a lot of people. And the thing is that when you do that, you are inviting a bunch of, like, not a bunch of shitheads, but a small percentage of shitheads to come in and say, Dan, you're a piece of shit, whatever it is, right? And the thing is that some people can't take that shit. A lot of people can't, right? And that's what stops them, because they fear the blowback that they're going to get by putting something that's, like, wildly unpopular in terms of their opinion or whatever it is. And there are a couple of other things. Number one is that, I mean, there are a couple of other things, which is like they don't see Twitter as a priority. They don't see the potential that it can actually bring by being prolific in it. And yeah, man, just a general lack of belief, you know, just a lack of belief in themselves.
If you don't love yourself to begin with, it's very difficult to win at the content creation game. You'll be acting in fear. You'll be scared when you hit it too big. You'll be upset when you hit it too low. But if you're internally whole when you start the process, the judgment doesn't mean anything, because you're content with you already, and that's already the win. And then if people follow you or like your message, or they agree with what you say or hate what you say, it doesn't matter, because you're good with you. And that's the important thing that I want to get across.
And the thing is that, are we ever going to be like completely comforted in our own self-image and our own self-opinion? I'm going to say, hey, you know, there are, I mean, like, for me, it's a constant process, you know, it's a constant process. But you do have to have a modicum of just self-worth and an opinion about yourself that is apart from the others, that is apart from anyone else's opinion that can get on top of that. So I'll say an example. So this guy, Zach Strength, just followed him, great guy, posted this thing, retweeted or quote tweeted me or whatever that is. One guy came under his tweet and be like, I think my tweet was like, hey, if a guy takes steroids and he doesn't say anything about it, then he lacks integrity. And then to me, he's dead to me, because if you're trying to do something for a quick buck or a quick follower, you know, then he's dead. You know, I don't trust him anymore. Then this guy comes in and is like, Dan, talking about integrity? Like, who is this guy to talk about this? And he's doing everything to trade everything for followers and shit like that. And the thing is that, you know, when you see that, it gives you this initial, like, you know, it gives you the initial one of two things. Number one is like, oh, fuck. Like, is that true? Or it could give you like the off, like, oh, fuck you, man. Like, go, you know, go fucking sit on the fucking stick or something like that. But the thing is, you have to realize that, you know, when people say these things, or the things that you're inviting, they can be either feedback, which is to say that, you know, hey, I have this Twitter account. Every, like, 99% of people hopefully like me on that Twitter account or whatever. So everyone's like, Dan, like, fucking whatever you say is, it's amazing, you know? Or you'll have the small percentage of people that say that. And then if someone says something that makes you feel a certain way, that is actually a signal to look into yourself and be like, okay, well, is there a part of me, if I'm feeling like I'm hurt by this comment, is there a part of me that feels like I am lacking integrity? I am lacking like trust or whatever like that? So it always comes back to the person. It always comes back to me. It never, like, even if you get outside feedback, criticism, and all that kind of stuff, it always comes back to me. If someone makes you feel a certain way, guess what? That's like an emotion that's actually been triggered. That actually should have some sort of research around to see whether or not that emotion, you know, is true, right? So, yeah, I think we went off on a tangent there, but yeah.
That's what all this fun is going off into tangents, figuring out where we're supposed to go, because the conversation is the joy itself, man. And and so take me through the process of do you have a practice away from Twitter where you're looking at yourself and you're evaluating yourself on a daily or monthly or weekly basis that is a way to reflect and to ask those questions that you might not get a chance to?
I do it in a couple of ways. So when I'm in the spot of feeling this particular emotion, and I'll call them negative emotion, I actually say like they're signals, right? Mm-hmm. So when I'm in this spot, I go into myself and I ask myself like something I call the seven whys, you know, just like keep on asking myself why. So I remember there was a time that, you know, I was in the middle of the Twitter game and I was about to head to the gym, and then one guy goes on and says something about me and it makes me feel a certain way. I go to the gym and I'm just like, okay, well, why do I feel this way? Right? And then I'll just keep on like having this conversation with myself inside of my own mind, and I trust my intuition to come up with the answers that are inherently true to me. I trust my intuition a lot, actually. And we can talk about intuition in a second, because there's something very specific that we do to kind of like keep on trusting it. But I have this conversation with myself and I ask myself questions. So why do I feel this way? Oh, I feel this way because this guy's a fucking jerk and he said this, whatever, right? Okay, so why does that bother you? It bothers me because, you know, X. Okay, so why exactly does that make you feel, you know, the way that you feel? And you keep on asking yourself why. And just that one instance, I was like, okay, well, I asked myself why so many times to the point where I got down to the fact that I was the fourth of four kids, right? And my whole job in my family was trying to play peacemaker, because we had a very highly dysfunctional family. Along with being peacemaker, I had this wants and desire for everyone to like me, right? And then I dug down deep enough inside of my own brain to be like, okay, well, shit, I just want people to like me. This has been something that I've wanted since like I was like a fucking kid, you know? Now, do I need everyone to like me? Absolutely not. I just need to like myself. Within reason, obviously. And then the second thing I do is I have regular journaling sessions with myself, and these are written and these are personal. And basically it's like talking to myself on the journal and just being like, this happened, that happened. And then just letting your brain kind of like freeform and write whatever the hell is on your mind. Most of the times it's like, oh yeah, I took my daughter Koa here and we did this and we did that. A lot of times it's just, or not a lot of times, but a small amount of times it's just like, well, this thing happened with like my neighbor and it made me feel this way. What does this mean? What am I trying to get out of this? And then I take myself through kind of like these questions. Okay, what is my goal here? What am I trying to accomplish, right? Get myself back to what I'm trying to always accomplish. What am I trying to put out there? What type of influence am I trying to have? Then I bring it back to, okay, well, you know, this is what I want. What exactly am I not doing to get to this spot? What am I doing, right? What exactly is not working? How exactly, what kind of lessons can I learn from this that have nothing to do with the other person or the other thing or whatever it is or the situation? What is it about myself that this is actually bringing to attention that I have been avoiding this entire time? And just asking myself these questions and having the really hard conversations. This is kind of like what I call the difference between like a sociopath and like a human being. Like a sociopath would just say, everything is like happening in my favor. And like, you know, I have no effect on the people around me. And I am cool with the way I act as long as like I'm getting mine kind of thing, you know. As opposed to like a full human being who is like, okay, well, I do have an effect on other people and I have an effect on myself. Now, I can't affect how I feel or how I, you know, relate myself to other people, but I can choose the message and the way in which I say my message from here. And I can't choose the reactions, but I can choose to put it in the way that I can put it in, and I can come out with that. So, and the other way would be just straight therapy, like talking to someone, like talking to a professional, you know, and getting deep in regards to that, and talking with professionals and therapists. Is people would be like, yeah, my friends are therapists. No, your friends aren't fucking therapists, okay? Your friends are not fucking therapists. Yeah, I talk to my therapist every day. I call my friends. I'm like, no, your friends aren't fucking therapists. Okay, literally talk to someone that's professional. And I think like regardless of whatever you're going through mental health-wise, if you even feel like you're great, I would still talk to a mental health professional because there's so many things happening beneath the surface that we just are not privy to. So have it done with like your own therapy sessions and then get it done with an actual professional as well.
Yeah. And it's really interesting because I think that talking to a friend can be therapeutic, but that doesn't mean it's necessarily therapy and at that level of therapy. And it's really important also because when you go to therapy, you set aside time where this is a weekly practice now. Similar to going to the gym, it's a weekly practice or you three times a week practice. So I think that's really important. And on the topic of journaling and writing down your thoughts, you look at that and you start to become aware of your own thoughts in a much deeper way. I want to ask about how that impacts your own intuition because you mentioned that briefly. How does journaling impact your intuition?
Journaling gets you in touch with the voice that's going on inside of your head, right? So everyone thinks these thoughts. No one takes the time to write them out and to see them and to be like, oh shit, this is the way I talk to myself? Oh no, you know? And it is only through this process of talking to yourself in which you get really in touch with this inner voice. And that is like the first step. But the other steps are literally making decisions with your intuition and trusting that whatever voice that comes out and whatever answer that comes out is literally the one that you can trust. So one of the things I do, or one of the, like before I didn't trust myself, this is way a long time ago. I never trusted my own thoughts, never trusted my own actions. Always kind of doubted myself to a certain extent, especially with stuff like that seemed really scary, right? Making this jump, or moving to this place, or choosing to sell my business, right? It always has this, like, you know, you depending on how close you are to your inner voice and your intuition, it could get garbled a little bit. So I do this very specific thing, and I go with light pressure at first and heavy pressure later on. So it'll be looking like this, like I'm in a clothing store. And this is like just testing out and training my intuition. I look at a piece of clothing and I ask myself, do I want this or not? Do I want to buy this or not? And then my brain is binary. It's like yes or no. There's no like, I don't know. It's like yes or no, right? Once it says yes, you gotta trust that motherfucker and be like, all right, good. Let's go to we're buying this right now. And then you do that with like all these like low level decisions, like picking what food you're going to eat. It actually helps you become very decisive as well, you know, doing it in this sense, but that's another topic. But once you do this enough times, you start to trust the voice that's inside of your brain and asking it for guidance, so to speak. So when I wanted to sell my business, my first business, I remember it was at the end of this like incredible mushroom trip. Won't get into details about that, but I asked myself at the end, I was journaling, I was like, oh my, and it's like, I want to sell my gym. And then I wrote down, I was like, do I really want to do this? And my brain was like, fuck yes, you want to do this. It actually didn't say fuck yes, it just said yes. And I was like, and then the time you look at it, you're like, ah, shit, okay. And then you just have to literally trust that voice and the answer that it gives you. And then take those steps and those actions that you need to take to make those things happen. And yeah, man, it, my whole life has been a constant trusting of that intuition and of that voice to guide me to the things that I actually want and the things that will actually fulfill me in the end, right?
So the low pressure and high pressure, just so we get this straight, yeah. Low pressure situations, yeah. And mm-hmm. high pressure situations. First, you test it out with the low pressure situations, buying a piece of clothing. Then you you trust it for the high pressure situations, like
absolutely
selling the business.
Think of it like how many times are you actually exposed to trusting your intuition? The more times that you expose yourself to trusting yourself in your or trusting your intuition, the more times you're able to give yourself that leeway to say, hey, okay, good. Okay, I trust you. I know where this is going, right? But you can only do it through a lot of exposure. So if you never trusted your intuition or that inner voice inside of you before, and you're trying to make this big fucking decision, whether it's to leave a relationship or whether it's to start this business or to quit this job so you can actually start the business of your dreams, you can't necessarily get from A to Z without being exposed enough times to being comfortable by doing that. Mm-hmm. So exposure comes from playing against the C level, D level players. You know, I'm going to start you off to go down the path of the NBA. You know, if you're a high schooler, I'm getting you against like the junior varsity guys first. You dominate those motherfuckers. Then we get you into varsity. Then you keep on going upgrades. You're not going, maybe you're not going straight to the NBA. Maybe you're hitting the college, or maybe you're hitting the G League first. You know, again, to expose yourself to that increased level of competition. So by the time you hit the biggest competition in the world, you actually have been exposed enough times with all those little wins that you've had along the way to trust yourself in that big situation to know that you can handle it.
What's the equivalent of that for somebody who is trying to lift weights for the first time in getting those small wins or putting them against the JV players? As a coach, I know you've so much experience. So where would someone listening to this right now has not gone to the gym, treated their nutrition correctly, they know they should be doing it. Speak to that person directly and let them know what are the small wins they should take in the beginning.
The smallest win that you can ever have when you're trying to create this routine, this machine to keep yourself going to the gym is literally having a rule where however many times a week that you give yourself, let's just say 3 times a week, that you're going to the gym. And let me tell you this, you don't have to do any workout whatsoever. You don't even have to go to the change room. You don't even have to pass the barrier where it says you're actually going into the gym. You literally just have to get your ass to the gym 3 times a week. Now, whatever you decide after that point is what you decide, okay? But 99 times out of 100, you're probably going to be like, okay, well, I'm just going to, like, you know, walk on the treadmill just a little bit. And that's a fucking win, right? Especially if you're just starting out. That's it. That's a win. When I first started out, I said to myself, and this is coming from a guy who was whose reality was sitting on the couch, eating a bag of chips, like one of those big ones, ketchup, you know, Lay's or whatever it is. That's a Canadian thing. And playing video games or watching like a TV show and then just doing it all over again until my night was over. I was a lazy POS. But my dad was like, okay, I'll give you this month pass, or my dad was actually giving it to my brother. My brother passed it down to me. And I was like, I said this to myself when I first got this pass. I was like, I know I'm a lazy, fat piece of whatever, you know, but, you know, why don't I go to the gym? And the worst thing that I can do is just see girls. That's it. That's the worst that can happen. Like, I just see girls, I go in there, I do a couple bicep curls, and I'm out, right? And I told myself, that's the win. Like, hey, I just want to go there. If I see an attractive girl or I work out, you know, just whatever. That's a big win for me. And I did that. And that was just what I was basing my success off of. Afterwards, you do that enough times, you're like, okay, well, come on. Like, I see this guy like pushing 45s on like the bench press. That looks like a pretty good goal too, you know? And you keep on kind of just like doing these incremental wins for yourself every single time. And all you're doing is just showing up to the arena, right? Just showing up into the arena and saying, I'm stepping in the arena. I don't feel like it today, but I stepped in. That's a win. I can go out, right? And all you're doing is just showing up. And showing up literally to me is like 80% of the battle. And if you can actually just say, hey, I'm going to walk inside the gym. I don't have to do shit. All I do is just like walk inside. That's a big win to me. And that's all you got to start with.
Yeah, that can be applied to any habit, anything you want to improve anything. As well. And yeah. I want to go back to the piece about you selling your business and writing that out that you were going to sell your business. And it sounded like when you said that, there was a level of fear that came up. Yeah. I don't know if that was true, but so you have a level of fear. And fear to me is the idea that we know we're going to have to change. We know we're going to have to grow. So how did you go about tackling that fear of selling the business, of changing, of growing in that moment?
It's, oh man, how did I tackle it? Well, after that decision, I took 3 years to make it happen. So, wow. I mean, I guess there's like a big, I mean, well, the thing is like the way I saw the gym business was it needed to be set up in a specific way where it could be sold. And the way in which it was set up already probably could not be sold for the amount that I was afterwards. So maybe that's what the reason why it took 3 years. Mm-hmm. The other thing was, it's just like, you know, you actually write it out, and the simple act of like writing it out and creating a plan towards it, that's like 50% of making it a reality for yourself. So basically, I had this like bigger vision for myself, and deep down inside, I knew for a fact that I was meant for bigger things, that I was meant to influence the world in a bigger way. And I knew that about myself, and it wasn't coming out by owning a fucking gym and only serving a small portion of a local populace. So I knew that already.
Why did you know that?
I have no fucking clue. I've got no... I don't know. Actually, I really don't know. I'll tell you right now. When I woke up, or when I grew up in my life, I literally thought that everyone was a robot. And I thought I was like... This was like a literal belief in my mind, which is like, yo, I'm around robots this entire time. They're just cyborgs doing the same thing over and over and over. And I just didn't see the world in that way, you know? And actually, I'm so thankful that early on in my beginning, I had a mentor, this guy, Dean Bukharis, and he literally changed my life in such an altruistic way. He didn't even ask for anything in return. It was amazing. So he was like this, he was like a high school friend of mine. And I remember he was like, hey, I have this online business. Like, dude, teach me. This is when I was like a trainer at the gym before I even owned a business. I'm like, dude, teach me, you know? And he's like, cool, come over to my house. His house was like walking distance from mine because we were all part of the same high school. I go to his house and he basically gifts me almost like thousands of hours in self-development CDs, right? So I had Get the Edge, I had Jim Rohn stuff, and he's like, this is all you got to do. Do everything that it says in these CDs and come back to me, right? And basically, I tore through those motherfuckers. And then that opened up my mind. And I would actually say that the very first belief that I could do amazing big things came from my mom. So as a parent, she actually, like, I was super, super lazy, high school dropout. My parents were worried about me, but then she would always come up to me every single time, sit me across her boardroom table, and she would be like, Dan, you can put anything you put your mind to. You can do anything you put your mind to. You could do anything you put your mind to. She kept on saying that over and over, and I'm here, this like high school dropout, like no purpose in life. I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. When she passed away, I was just like, oh, fuck. You know, and then that's when I started to really change my life. That's actually the big decision that I had to make. And it actually took the precursor of my mom passing away for me to do something that I felt was like in line with the life that I was to lead, right? And that thought just literally stuck with me this entire time. I do believe that we are only conformed to the size of our thinking. So I think, like, I used to think $100,000 was a lot of money, right? And guess what? You make $100,000, then you're like, okay, well, okay. Some people cap themselves at that. That actually, so for me, I was just like, well, everything is an idea. And the idea is only, the idea is like only confined by your level of thinking. So with this principle in mind, what if I thought fucking big? What if I thought huge? What if I thought that I could make a dent in the universe? What if I thought that I could make a difference in the lives of millions of people? And I kept that thought with me. And to me, the underlying, it was an underlying idea that I was bigger than what I was actually doing, or I could actually achieve more than what I can actually influence more. I can change more. I can actually change more lives as a result. So that was like always there, and that was instilled in me by my mom. And that was actually further fueled by her death. Now, the whole idea of like the fear around selling my business was a couple of things. Number one was the biggest fear was actually keeping on and staying at that business because it was comfortable. That was the biggest fear of mine. That was the hugest fear of mine, which is like, I'm super comfortable, but I'm not passionate about this thing anymore. And then this is what we call, so people say the golden handcuffs with like 9-to-5s and whatever. Like, you can have the golden handcuffs with your own business, right? You could be doing something that's making you a ton of money, but it's not bringing fulfillment. You know, like, the thing is that we have to understand that golden handcuffs are not just confined to, you know, working for someone else. So my biggest fear was actually the opposite, which was like, oh God, if I stick with this for like another 5 to 10 years, number one, if I have a daughter, she's going to have to rely on this income this entire time. If I'm married, we're going to have to rely on this income this entire time. I'm going to keep on having to grow this fucking business and shit. And then I'm like, I'm going to have to grow a business I'm not even passionate for. Oh God, oh, like, no, can't do that. So that was actually my biggest fear, which is like sticking in there, being even more comfortable and having to live that life. That was the biggest fear. The other fears were, actually, I'll tell you right now, right off the bat, after that decision that I made to sell that company, I actually made the decision to say that if I don't sell this company, I am actually going to give it up. And I'm going to just like, you know, like, I am actually going to close up the doors when the lease is over, which was like actually about 3 months after the sale happened. And I'm just going to say, fuck it. I'll give you guys back your money. And I'm just going to go do this new thing right now and just start completely brand new. Thankfully, we sold the business. Thank God we sold the business. But I was prepared to do that. So the biggest fear was like what I would have become not making that decision. And that was like, that was worse than death. Because the way I looked at it, I've worked a 9-to-5 job before. And I know what that feels like. And I know that's not for me. And I know what the eventual like future of that is. It's like safety. It's comfort. It's like, it's all these things, which is not something that I actually want to live in. You know, I want to live in slaying fucking dragons every single fucking day. You know, like, that's what I want to do. I want to deal with new problems. I want to deal with bigger problems. I want to deal with all this kind of stuff. So for me, it was the biggest fear was like not doing it.
Oh man, you gave me so much to dive into here. I want to go to, let's say if you are the mentor, you know, you had this great mentor who gave you these CDs, who gave you these audiobooks, and who changed your life in an incredible way. Now, let's say somebody is going to present day Dan and is saying, I want the audiobooks, I want the resources, and your Twitter account is amazing, but where else should I go to improve my mindset and become all I can be? What resources are you giving that person?
I would actually, man, starting from ground zero, it's so hard to look back and be like, look at where you were with when you didn't have shit and be like, what would I have done at that point in time? And the number one resource I would actually do would be to actually tell them that you should be okay being alone for a little bit. Mm. That's actually the one thing. And it's actually to be okay to be alone and to work on yourself. And that also means giving up the friends who are, let's just say, quote unquote, enabling you in one way or another. So it doesn't start with what should I add? It actually starts with what should I take away? What should I remove from my life? And for me, when I went on this particular journey, I'm going to be honest with you, I got rid of like 99% of my friends. And I was alone for a great period of time. I actually stopped interacting with my family for a period of time because they basically did not understand what I was doing. They didn't understand. And then every single time I talk about it, they'd be like, go do something like, you know, with your life and like all this kind of stuff. I'm like, I can't talk to you guys. I don't want that negativity in my brain. And I just got to separate myself from that. So it is literally getting yourself away from pretty much anyone that would actually hold you back from achieving the thing that you want to achieve. And being okay with being lonely and being alone. And that is actually, I post this on my Twitter. It's like, be okay and actually understand that you should be able to enjoy your own fucking company, right? You shouldn't, like, if you don't enjoy your own company, then that's a pretty good way of saying that you feel, it's a pretty good way of being lonely. And the thing is that when you're making one transition to another, like, you can't, you're going in different directions. You're not going to be able to bring everyone along with you. So literally, it's taking stock of everyone that's around you, keeping the people that you feel are going to be, are actually going to be a benefit, I guess you could say. People that you feel are going to be a great influence on you. And then going on that journey and actually taking action. That's the very first thing. And then afterwards, I would say if it is at all possible for you, there are multiple levels of mentors that are out there. So Dean Bukharis, to me, my first mentor, he was a sphere of influence mentor. And usually these guys, they actually take as much of an investment in you as, say, like someone that you paid because you are vetted from someone else. So if you have someone in your sphere of influence that is doing something bigger or doing something that you want to do or whatever it is, contact that person and get around that person and do whatever you can. Be an intern for that person if you have to, but do whatever you can to be within that sphere of a new environment, of a new way of thinking. And if at all possible, go find out and actually go and pay for the mentor that you actually want to have. Go into debt to actually pay this mentor if you need to, as long as the mentor is vetted and he's not a scam artist and stuff. Like, be careful out there. But definitely pay someone to be your mentor so they are actually invested in the result that you're trying to get. So for me, I didn't know I owned a gym, but I didn't know how to do online training, or I didn't know how to do an online training business. So I hired someone for $20,000 to teach me how to fucking do this. And he taught me how to do this. And now I've turned that $20,000 into a lot of Ks now, right? and the thing is that a lot of people look at the payment of mentorship. It's like, I don't know if I want to do this. Like, no, that's like the biggest way to fast track your success is to actually pay someone to skip over the mistakes, to get their knowledge, and to pay $10,000 or $20,000 in order to make $100,000 at the end of that year. I do that like every single time. And
We spoke at length in our first episode about coaching and the benefit and impact that it's had on you. And so I highly recommend people check out episode 9 of this podcast, which we'll link below for that. I want to talk about your mom and the incredible gift she gave you that you seems like you've held on to this day of saying you could do anything you set your mind to. Is there any other impactful messages that stick with you from her or from close family or friends that you repeat in your head often?
This is a hard one. This is actually a hard one to answer, because I come from a family where the words of affirmation and love were really hard to come, you know, to come by and all that kind of stuff. So, but I will say that it was more of an example of the example that they set for me. Mm-hmm. So they didn't have to say anything at all. So my dad, the reason I'm working out right now is because my dad started working out. I started seeing him go to the gym 6 a.m. every single day. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing, man? He's like, I'm going to the gym. Didn't say anything. Didn't tell me to go. And I'm like, okay, that actually looks cool. I could do that with my time. I go to the gym. I see my parents working their ass off. They're immigrants coming into this country. And they didn't have the internet. And they didn't have, like, they had to use maps to get around and all this kind of stuff. And they didn't have anyone to look at to be like, this is how you build a successful business. But they did it because they grinded. They said that, well, they didn't say this, but I took it as like the harder that you work, the luckier you get, right? And I just look at their work ethic and the things that they're willing to do for their own family and for the success of their business. And I took that and I was just like, well, obviously we can improve upon the way that in which they treated themselves in terms of like getting as much success as possible. But that principle of just being hardworking and showing up every single day, it stuck with me, you know? And I wouldn't say like, I think like family to a certain degree is like one of those things that you take inspiration from. I was very friend-centric at that time too. So it was actually a best friend of mine. And his whole thing, and again, he didn't say anything to me. He didn't say, you could do it and all this kind of stuff, whatever. I literally saw him get married at 21, have a kid at 21, and while we're partying at 20, like for me, I was partying like crazy. He was too, but he was showing up every single day, 12 hours a day, 14 hours a day, to the air conditioning business that his dad owned, and he showed up every single day, 6 days a week, so sometimes 7 days a week. And I'm just like, why are you working so hard, man? And I didn't realize it. You know, I was such a kid at the time, but he had a wife and he had the kid, you know. But I saw that and I'm like, you're showing up every day for this job. And that left an impression on me. He's very uber successful. He, you know, makes a lot of money and all that kind of stuff. But that left an impression on me for sure. And then the rest of my mentors were from books and mentors and people that I've just like coached with and whatnot.
With the fact of, you mentioned your friend leaving an impact on you who was just had a newborn baby, right? I know you also newborn baby, and I'm curious what lessons or things that you are passing on to her that maybe you didn't have access to, information, resources. What are you passing on to your daughter?
The first thing that I'm passing on to her is this unconditional love and attention from her dad. That is the very first thing, because when she looks at me, when she talks to me, I put the phone down and I'm just like, all right, say what's up. You know, I'm here and I'm looking at you and I'm focused. So that's the very first thing that I want to give her, which is my unadulterated focus and attention and interaction as a dad with her. And other than that, like, I think the lessons will all come later, but at least for me, I want her to see me taking care of my body and my health. I want her to see us eating in a certain way, you know, and just in general, the way in which my wife and I interact with each other, to me, that's probably one of the most impactful things that we could do for our daughter, which is to say that I want to show my daughter how a relationship looks like with another human being. And I want our relationship or my wife and I's relationship to be a glowing example of what a great relationship looks like. Do we have uncomfortable conversations and do we have all this stuff? Yes, absolutely. But overall, we want to show her what a family unit looks like. And I think we're doing a really good job of that. Now, apart from all that kind of stuff, I would want her to be an entrepreneur and own her own destiny and all that kind of stuff. And wanted to work out and I wanted to, you know, do all this kind of stuff. But at the same time, it's hard to impact her when she doesn't even know how to speak English at this point. So our main focus is at this part of her life right now is to actually show her love, to give her attention, and to show her that her parents love each other as well. That's our biggest focus.
What a beautiful thing that she can look back on in 20 years and or hopefully 15 and be able to witness that. God, you say that. How crazy is that?
I hope, man. You know, you never know.
Right. True. Nothing, take nothing for granted. But exactly, I hope so as well. And I want to ask about the peace of your presence, because you mentioned how you, when you spend time with your daughter, and even in this conversation, it seems you're so present, and it's an incredible gift to have this time with you, to be in the presence of someone. I do all these podcasts, I do all these interviews, and sometimes people are fidgeting around, people have things to do, people are checking their phone, people have messages, and it's a real honor and a gift when someone is fully there, fully with you. So
appreciate it.
So what has contributed to that presence from your perspective?
It is, I mean, like, obviously I'm a work in progress, that's for sure. But the thing is like, I try with conversations like this that we're having right now to completely just turn off my brain and to, one, let whatever, like, to really intake what you're saying and to try to listen to it and to try to understand and clarify, like, okay, so this is what he's asking me. The other thing is to clear my mind and to be like, boom, these are my answers without me having to think about them. And I think it's just like the constant practice of turning off your brain when someone else is talking to you and looking at them in the eye. And I've been practicing mouth open, mouth closed. Should I have my mouth open when I'm listening to them? Should I have my mouth closed when I'm listening to them? And of course, maybe I'm not listening to the conversation if I'm asking myself things in this conversation, you know, but it's trying to figure out the best way in which I can understand and listen to you and anyone else that's in front of me. It doesn't happen all the time, that's for sure. But again, like, my presence and my attention is something that I can get a lot out of, and I'm giving a lot to another person. So I just try, actually, like, I have this thing. It's like, if I find like the voice in my mind just like going incessantly while this guy's like talking to me or whatever, I'll be like, clear the brain. All right, nothing. All right, let's listen to you. You know, and it's just like, you have to almost like constantly remind yourself of that to give presence, which actually starts with not having thoughts while another person is talking and thinking about what to say afterwards to reply back to them.
Yeah. It's like, it's even harder on a screen too, right? So
yes,
it's a magical thing when you trust yourself enough to just be in a conversation and not think about the past or future or what you're going to say. Just let it be.
Yeah.
And it's the most magical moments and conversations happen when that occurs.
When you're trying to have a conversation with someone and you don't want anything out of them, and you just don't care, and you're just like, I'm just going to have this conversation to have a conversation. That's where the best conversations come from. Yep. It's just literally clearing your mind, pitching back and forth, and really seeking to understand the other person. Mm-hmm. Right? Which is something that is in very short supply nowadays. But we need to understand where the other people are coming from in order to have a nuanced idea of our opinions, right? And the thing about our opinions, like, a lot of people treat them as like black and white, and this is the way, this is not the way, and yada, yada, yada. When the reality is that, no, like, I had a conversation actually with one of my clients, amazing guy, and we were having a real conversation on vaccines, which is not something that you can actually have with a lot of people, right? He, you know, he has taken the vaccine and like all this kind of stuff. I'm not going to release like my vaccination status, you know, or whatever, but we actually had a real conversation about, and the nuance about it. Well, you know, these, you know, the people who are against like vaccines, you know, they're thinking this particular way, and they do have an actual point in regards to that. And the people who are taking vaccines, you know, well, this is what they're trying to get at. And there is a point where everyone intersects and can actually agree on the same things. But you can't get into that when you're always like seeped in your own opinion of like the way things should be and like all this kind of stuff. The thing is, like, if you want to be a genius, if you want to actually be an independent thinker, then you have to allow these nuanced ideas and these seemingly ideas that are against what you're thinking and allow them into your brain and play around with them and actually see the truth from both sides of the conversation that's happening. And that's where the true listening comes from. And that's where people get felt, that's where people get understood, and that's where people get heard.
What other ways can we practice independent thinking?
Whatever opinion that you have, build up the opinion that's totally against it and practice that, right? So you think, let's just say like cows smell, whatever like a black and white opinion that you have, literally go research the opposite of the opinion and do so in a way where you're actually intaking it, not being emotional, which a lot of people can be when it's like a difference of opinion, but intaking it, be like, and actually trying to find and see the truth in that, right? And trying to see the truth in what they're saying. And then going back to your opinion. And then afterwards, you can either be more steeped in your opinion or you can actually have a nuanced opinion about, oh, well, you know, yeah, this stuff matters and this stuff matters, right? And that is one of the best ways. The other way is to obviously like journal and to see yourself like when you're actually thinking in a binary belief, like almost like you have this like binary belief way of thinking, to question that every single time. And I post this thing on Twitter and one of my friends, I really respect him a lot. So I posted this thing on Twitter. It's like, always give yourself just enough room to allow yourself to be wrong. And then my friend, the very opinion guy, is like, no. and then I'm just like, okay, cool. But the thing is that if we are to look back at history, our history, you know, your history, my history, how many times have we been wrong about shit? A lot. You go back, you go forward like 3 years into the future, like, oh, fuck, I was so wrong. You're wrong about a lot of stuff. Yep. A lot. So you cannot be so, like, the thing is that you have to chin check yourself all the time. And you cannot be so egotistical to think that your opinion is the only one that actually matters. And to understand that you are wrong a lot. You know, like, to have that almost like a buffer to allow yourself to be wrong. And be like, hey, I could be wrong in regards to this. I could be.
Yeah, I think so often about just looking back 100 years or 500 years about how people thought they had to figure it out and new science comes along to discover new things that was previously never heard about. And it's happening right now as well. And there are things that everyone, that the far majority believe, that is just flat wrong. And it's sad, and there's nothing we could do about it, but the only thing we can is to remain independent to the idea that we're wrong and do the best we possibly can in each moment.
Exactly. And just leave that room. Like, just be like, hey, I could be wrong, but, you know, this is what the data is showing me, kind of thing, mm-hmm. right? As opposed to being like, no, this is the way, or, you know, like, fuck. It's to actually give yourself that leeway. And I don't think enough people do it, and they're building up this false sense of ego, which actually contributes to their own insecurities, right? And makes them double down on the fucking opinions that they have that were wrong in the first place. You know, so it's a clusterfuck. It's a cycle a little bit. Right? Yeah. And to me, the guys that are the smartest are the guys that are able to have discourse and discussion and to not be seeped in one opinion and to be able to change their mind whenever they see fit and to not have that egotistical connection between being right or learning, right? You're either doing one or two. You're not doing both. You can't do both. So you choose one.
Yeah. It's constant progression, constant learning, constantly getting better. It seems like that is you. And I'm curious, for someone pursuing the highest version of themselves, whether that's mentally, physically, spiritually, I don't know if I asked you this question on episode 9, but I'll be curious to go back and find your answer. What today, Dan Goh, October of 2021, what is his answer to someone who is pursuing the highest version of himself mentally, physically, spiritually, whatever it may be?
What is my answer to him?
No, what is your answer to someone who is pursuing the highest version of themselves?
What is my answer? Fuck. I mean, like, I don't know if he had a question, but if he did, I just say, like, be okay with the fact that you're never going to get there. That's it. Mm. You know, be okay with that. Be okay with the fact that it's never going to end. Never going to end. And it is almost like a feeling of relief to understand that it's never going to end, depending on how you take it, right? So there are, to me, there are infinite levels to this game. And there are infinite ways to achieve. And to me, you're only, again, you're only confined by how big or how small your thinking is. So why not choose a big fucking thought, and why not take action towards it and see exactly what happens, you know? And that's the thing. It's like, I wish for everyone, especially a guy who's like growth minded, you know, it's just like understand that you have the capacity to create anything that you want in life. Anything. Literally anything, right? And I'm not going to talk about the universe and like all this kind of shit and whatever like that, but we have this infinite capacity to achieve and to make anything in the world, anything that we want. So take advantage of that, and don't limit yourself to what people think you can achieve. Don't even limit yourself whatsoever to what you think you can achieve. Go after what you feel is going to make the biggest difference in yourself and in the world. And then that's how you should be going about it.
Wise words from my friend Dango. Where can people connect with you further, Mr. Go?
You can find me on Twitter at FitFounder. You can find me on Instagram. Follow me there. It's at Dan Founder. And I have a podcast that's out. It's called the High Performance Founder Podcast. And that's where I do solo episodes. I'm going to get into interviews soon, but I kind of like the solo episode thing a little bit. So that's where I drop a lot of the stuff that we're doing with clients, that we're actually achieving with clients. Really awesome stuff. I feel like it's kind of different than what a lot of people are doing out there. So, you know, if you're so inclined to get your body in shape in a sustainable way and do so in a way that is actually fun, I would say go to that podcast and learn exactly all the things that we do.
And we'll put all those links below. Thank you for your time, Dan. It's absolute pleasure. So grateful for you.
Yeah.
So thank you for spending it with me here.
Absolutely, man. It's always an honor getting on these with you. Can't wait to do number 3. 3 times a charm, baby. So we'll wait a little bit until that happens, but I can't wait to do it. All right. Love you, Danny. You're a great guy.
I love you too, man. Peace.
All right.
Hope you enjoyed that episode with the man, the myth, the legend, Dan Go. If you enjoyed this episode, you can also listen to another episode of me and Dan, episode 9, and you can see the differences. You can see the things that he said, the things that were important to him. Very similar today, and it was great to get his updated perspective on things. So you can check that out, episode 9. But thank you for listening to this episode with Dan. It means the world to me that you would spend any time on this podcast, let alone 1 hour and 23 minutes. So thank you from the bottom of my heart, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in the next episode. Peace.